you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable. Happy Saturday. 19th century ballet dancer Marie Taglioni is getting a name drop very quickly in one of this week's episodes of the show. And the meaning of that name drop is something that you can probably pick up from context, but it'll also probably be a little richer for folks who know more about her and her influence on the world of ballet.
We have an episode on Marie Taglioni, so we are sharing it again today. It originally came out on September 9th, 2013. Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today we're going to talk about one of my pet subjects.
Is it ballet?
It is.
I know this because I see what we're talking about.
You have all the notes. We've discussed it already.
I do. Well, we've had a lot of people who have asked us to talk about some various aspects of dance. We've gotten really a lot of dance requests.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
And I studied dance many, many years ago, and I love it still.
And my dance study was never as dance formal as yours was.
Oh, yeah.
Because you really studied dance, and I studied dance in the context of drum corps. So
yeah, no, I was in a dance program in college, and prior to that, I had studied fairly seriously ballet for a while. There was a time in my life where I thought I was going to pursue ballet as a career, and then I went through puberty, and it kind of messed that up because it turned out my body type was really not going to work.
No.
And that's evolved a little since. There's a little more room for variance in body type than there certainly was when I was coming up. But even so, once you kind of get a bust line and hips, it's turns get tricky. Everything kind of changes. So.
Well, and the story we're going to talk about today kind of is, it has a little bit of that to it because we're talking about compensations for a body.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about very famous to anybody who knows anything about dance, Marie Taglioni, who was a very famous dancer. She's really considered the ballerina of the Romantic era. And she's often credited with revolutionizing ballet, restyling it, redefining dance. But her father was really a pretty significant part of all of those achievements. And she came from a ballet family. So I mentioned her father, but also her grandfather, Carlo Taglioni, was a theatrical dancer and a choreographer. Her uncle Salvatore was a prominent dancer. Her mother was a Swedish ballerina named Hedvig Sophie Karsten, although she did not go by Hedvig. But her father, Filippo Taglioni, was really the biggest influence on her life and her career. And Filippo was a dancer and a choreographer. He was very successful. And he's credited with much of the development of what we now refer to as the romantic ballet style. So Marie had dance in her blood. Like, genetically, she should have been primed. But it didn't really play out that way initially.
No. In 1803, Filippo took a job as principal dancer and ballet master in Stockholm, Sweden. And that's where he met and married Sophie Karsten, which is the name. She used her middle name instead of her first name, which was Hedvig. They started a family right away. Marie was born on April 23rd, 1804 in Stockholm. Her brother Paul was born 4 years later. And Filippo accepted a post in Vienna when Marie was still an infant.
And Filippo did some training with his children when they were very young, but when they were school age, he moved them to Paris to pursue additional dance training. But despite being the daughter of two accomplished dancers and having a pedigree that went back even further than that, Marie really did not impress the ballet masters in the French capital.
According to Paris opera director Louis Veron's memoir, Jean-François Coulon, who was the Parisian teacher who had trained Filippo, once famously said this about Marie: "When will that little hunchback ever learn to dance?"
Yeah, I think he said it more forcefully and loudly, probably. He sounded like he was really not one to hold back.
Well, and I don't want to call young girls hunchbacks. I think that's terrible.
Yeah, it's a brutal world to grow up in sometimes.
Well, and especially when you're trying to do something that is difficult and requires skill.
Yeah, we don't know a lot about, like, sort of her mindset at the time, but I can't imagine what it must have been like to be the daughter of two well-known dancers, put in a pretty important ballet school and struggling.
Yeah.
That's not talked about very much, but it's an interesting thing to think about. But despite Coulon's comment, when Marie debuted in Vienna 2 years later in 1822, she was received to generally positive reviews. So something interesting happened in between.
Yeah, I kind of love this story, too.
It's a little wild to think about.
Yeah, so while Marie and her brother Paul were training with Coulon in Paris, they lived with their mother, and Filippo worked in various cities and toured around Europe. So throughout this time, their mom sent him letters telling him how well they were all doing, which was kind of an embellishment because Marie was not actually doing very well. She was a teenager at that point, and she was not an awesome dancer.
She was struggling. Paul did okay.
Yeah.
But, Marie really was not doing great. I mean, she was being called a hunchback by her teachers.
Yeah, but you know, mom was telling dad that it was all great.
And Filippo was so delighted to hear about how well the children were progressing that in 1821, he arranged for Marie's stage debut, which was going to be a little bit more than a year later because he wanted to have time to make preparations. And this announcement of his really set off a flurry of panic.
Yes.
Because the jig was up at that point.
Once Sophie learned of Filippo's planned public turnout for their daughter, she talked to Coulon for advice, and allegedly his reply was, "You wish for my advice? You have it, madame. You should make your daughter an embroideress, for she will never be a dancer." And she really did like embroidery.
Yeah, it turns out there's a great site we'll link to in the show notes that has a kind of an archive of various things of Marie Taglioni's. And one of them is like a scarf she knitted for a friend. And she apparently really enjoyed needlework her entire life, but she did not become an embroideress.
No.
So when Filippo sent for Maria to come to him in Vienna so he could, assess her dancing and make preparations for her debut, he was a little dismayed with what he saw. He then realized how completely inaccurate the accounts he had been getting about Marie's progress were. But he did not cancel the debut. Instead, he just decided that she was going to have to work constantly on her strength, on her technique, and that he would be her sole teacher during this time. And it sounds like he ran her through a rather grueling training program and also sort of a grueling lifestyle.
Yeah, he kept her completely out of the public eye. He allegedly kept her dancing for 6 hours or more every day, always working to correct these weaknesses and to kind of compensate for this unique body type that she had. There have been a lot of speculations about exactly what was going on, whether her back was deformed by a hunch or a curved spine. He insisted that she embody lightness and be ethereal while dancing, and his goal was to never hear her dancing. So this plain girl with a round back and, like, it kind of gangly limbs had to really work diligently to meet these goals that her father had set up for her.
And allegedly, the 6 hours of training were broken into 3 blocks of 2 hours. The first block was all about muscular exercises and strengthening the foot. The second was for practicing adagio exercises and balance work on one foot at a time. And then the third block was for practicing jumps. And Marie did eventually become quite famous for her jumps. So that third block was really paid off in the long run. Although really, you could say all of it did. When Marie took the stage for her debut in a piece called La Réception d'une jeune nymphe à la cour de Terpsichore, which is Reception of a Young Nymph in the Court of Terpsichore, in June of 1822, the reviews were actually good. Not sensational, but even so, the successful performance really launched her career. And, you know, they had dodged the bullet of embarrassment, and she began performing regularly on stages throughout France, Italy, Austria, and other places throughout Europe.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
this time, the epitome of balletic achievement and the goal that Filippo always had for his daughter was appearing at the Paris Opera. And despite the fact that Marie's popularity as a performer was growing all over Europe, she was still seen by the gatekeepers of the Paris stage as unattractive and unappealing. So as reviews of her appearances grew more and more glowing, public demand for a Paris appearance started to grow as well. Finally, 5 years after she debuted in Vienna, on July 24th, 1827, she ascended to that highest of heights and appeared for the first time at the Paris Opera in a version of the opera La Sicilienne. Her contract with the Paris Opera included a provision that she would only dance her father's choreography.
And something sort of interesting happened among Parisian reviewers when she started dancing there. They often spoke of her dancing as being effortless, even to the point of being artless. The perception was that her dancing just sprang from nature rather than training. But of course, nothing was further from the truth. She had been, you know, working all of those hours with her father, and they had effectively created this illusion that she had a natural talent rather than this skill that was born of just this ceaseless dedication and constant training. Just kind of interesting. I mean, you always hear about in any sort of artistic endeavor that you want it to look effortless, but they kind of, they almost did it so well that no one really gave her credit for how hard she worked.
Right. The composer Berlioz described Marie like this. Mademoiselle Taglioni is not a dancer. She's an air spirit, aerial personified, daughter of the heavens.
Which is interesting when you think about the early Coulon commentary about how she was kind of a clunky hunchback.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. And for the next 10 years after her Parisian debut, Marie stayed at the Paris Opera. She really gathered a very devoted following. She was, you know, basically a rock star in the world of ballet, always with her father as her teacher. And in 1830, so a few years after she had debuted in Paris, she signed a new, really lucrative contract with the Paris Opera. And included in that contract is the same provision that she would only dance solos choreographed by Filippo and that he was to be engaged as the ballet master there. And one thing that doesn't really get questioned or come up a lot that I think is just worth mentioning is that we really don't have a good sense of that father-daughter relationship. Some people have kind of asserted that he may have been manipulating her into, you know, these contracts that really benefited him. But he really did also make her a star. So it's a little unclear if their relationship had any animosity or weirdness, or if they were just in it together and, you know, pursuing this career as a pair.
Well, and I kind of wonder, given that he was dedicating so much effort to making choreography that worked with her body, I wonder whether she would have had the same success with a choreographer who did not have that as his objective.
I think she would not.
Yeah.
I can't know for sure, but
that's speculation on our part.
Yeah.
On March 12th, 1832, her father's ballet, La Sylphide, debuted at the Paris Opera with Marie starring. The ballet was choreographed to show off Marie's talents to the best effect, and it's often cited as the moment that truly ushered in the Romantic era of ballet. This rounded oval framing created by the porte-bras, which is the carriage of her arms, that Marie popularized was really, dance historians believe, created by her father, as we were talking about before, to compensate for her oddly shaped back.
Yeah, allegedly, if she just stood kind of in a neutral pose, her oddly shaped back that hunched a bit became obvious. But if she was forced to lift her arms over her head and in the oval position, it kind of lifted her breastbone up and it compensated for that. So it wasn't as obvious that she had kind of awkward posture. But even the costume that Marie wore is the sylph, which was a fitted bodice with a floaty tulle skirt that cut between the knee and the ankle. And was designed by Eugene Lamy, really became an iconic ballet image. The long floaty skirt is still seen in ballet today, and it's actually called a romantic tutu.
La Sylphide is also often cited as the first ballet which featured Marie dancing on point. This is something that happens all over the place in ballet now. If you go see the ballet, you will see dancers on point.
It's much more rare to see a ballet choreographed that does not involve point work.
Right. This was not the case at the time. There are engravings and lithographs of her on point that predate this ballet, but only by a few months. We've seen several that are dated 1831, so it's possible that those were promotional, even though some feature her in a costume from a previous ballet.
Yeah, we do know a lot of the foot strengthening work she was doing in those big 6-hour blocks was probably, leading up to this, that Filippo had this vision quite a while before they actually are credited with premiering it. And this version of Dancing on Toe, if you go to the ballet today, it's very different from what you would see now to what Marie was doing. It was much more delicate and restrained than modern point technique, largely due to the fact that at that time, the shoes had no blocking. If you look at point shoes now, they're very hard at the front. There's a lot of resin and they, are a pretty firm shape. They eventually get broken down and molded to the dancer's foot, and every dancer has a different kind of way they like them done. But these were completely soft, just like a regular soft ballet shoe that a child would wear, when they're learning nowadays. And it had a little bit of darning at the toe to add a slight stiffness, but again, created just with thread. There was no resin involved. So the toes and the ankles and the feet of the dancer had to be extremely strong to rise up on point at that point.
Yeah, and there wasn't a lot of time spent on point. It was used more as a change of levels to create this illusion of floating and gliding over the stage.
And it's worth noting that there were other dancers experimenting with point work. Taglioni got the most publicity because of the prominence of her position with the Paris Opera. And even though she's generally credited, if you look at any like quick history of ballet, it'll always give her credit for being the first to appear on point. But there were other dancers kind of playing with this concept.
The popularity of the costume design and the dance technique, repeated in other ballets of the time, ushered in an era where dancers were seen as ethereal, idealized, and almost otherworldly creatures, which I think has really continued until today.
Yeah, the other big popular ballet other than La Sylphide that was came a little bit later was Giselle, which is, again, performed frequently nowadays. It's very popular. And it too features like this woodland creature kind of story and, this mystical, almost fairy-like thing and generally costumed exactly the same, fitted bodice, floaty tulle skirt. So it really, the Romantic era really was about these kind of white dresses, floaty, otherworldly creatures. And through her younger years, Marie was seen as very chaste. She was undistracted by love. She was the epitome of purity. And some of that characterization was really fueled by these long white dance costumes that she became known for, as well as her dedication to her career and probably the fact that her father tended to keep her away from other people. Focused on dance, no time for boys.
Nah. 12 years into her career, though, she gave up single life. And she married Gilbert Comte de Voisin in London in 1834. They had a child together in 1835, but their marriage didn't last. They were separated in 1835, but they didn't divorce until 1844. There was another child in 1843, which did get his last name. It's pretty likely that it was not from the marriage.
Yeah, it's one of those things that was never particularly clear. Interestingly enough, the rumor is that both times that Marie was pregnant, she actually reportedly had a knee injury and so stepped away from the stage for that reason. But then, of course, they just kind of kept her private life. Her didn't even exist. It was really all about the image and this ballerina.
Yeah, I feel like that's like the 80s sitcoms where whatever actor was pregnant would have a duster in front of them or like be carrying something so you couldn't see.
In 1837, Marie and her father accepted contracts with the Russian Imperial Theater in St. Petersburg. And preceding her arrival, a pamphlet that was titled The Biography of Marie Taglioni was circulated in the city. And by the time she reached St. Petersburg, there was like this complete hubbub of excitement about her. Her first appearance at the Bolshoi Theater was sold out, and she enjoyed an extremely successful several years of dancing there. She last performed in Russia in 1842. And then there's a wacky story about that.
So gross. There's this apocryphal story. It's a supper that happened after her last Russian performance, at which a pair of her shoes, purchased for 200 rubles, were cooked and eaten with a sauce by a group of her most devoted fans, which is simultaneously disgusting and probably not true.
Yeah. Gross.
Yeah.
It's entirely, I have a suspicion, again, this is all speculation, that possibly her shoes would have been purchased, you know, almost as a like collector's item.
A souvenir.
Yeah. And then I think the dinner thing, that I don't know where it would have sprung from, but that seems extreme and bizarre. And again, gross. Having danced a lot, I know how disgusting dance shoes get. It's kind of like if you would eat a hockey glove. I mean, it's a similar level of grossness. It does not sound palatable or delightful in any way.
No. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
After her time in St. Petersburg, she continued to tour Europe and she performed for several more years.
But finally, in 1848, Taglioni retired from dance after 26 years on stage. The life of a professional dancer, which was always on the road, it was exhausting training. It was really starting to catch up to her because she was in her mid-40s at that point. She was not a spring chicken anymore.
No, and her retirement was kind of cut short by mismanagement of her finances. So in 1859, she went back to Paris to the opera, this time as the Inspectrice de la Danse. While she was holding this position, she instituted the company's exam system. And while teaching there, she met her protege, Emma Livry.
And Marie actually choreographed only one ballet in her life, and that was in 1860, and it was for Livry, and it was entitled Le Papillon, which means the butterfly. And the story involves a woman who is changed into a butterfly and then flies too close to a flame and burns its wings. And this sadly turned out to be somewhat prophetic.
While she would likely have gone on to a great career by virtue of Taglioni's blessing and teaching, Livry's life ended tragically in 1862 or possibly 1863. You see it differently in different sources. She brushed against a gaslight while rehearsing for an upcoming production, and her tutu caught fire, and she died from her burns.
Yeah, so only a couple years after her ballet by Taglioni. So she really died very young and quite tragically. But after 1870, Taglioni's next career move was in a completely different avenue of dance. So she had been at the Paris Opera for a while, but she then moved to London and taught ballroom dance, which she did for about 10 years. And interestingly enough, Filippo Taglioni, her father, died in 1871. So around this time, it was like all of her ties to ballet really ended. And whether that was coincidental or not, or if she just decided that as her father was reaching the end of his life, she was just going to be done with ballet and decided to pursue ballroom. Some reports say that ballroom was just a more lucrative option.
I can imagine that.
And she did continue to have some money struggles. So, yeah, it's just kind of that's the end of ballet for her.
Yeah. In 1880, she moved to Marseille with her son, and she died 4 years later on April 24th, 1884.
Now, initially, Marie was buried in Marseille, but she was later moved to Gilbert de Voisin's family plot in Père Lachaise in Paris. However, there has actually been a good bit of confusion through the years about her resting place. I imagine some of our traveled listeners that have been to Paris and been to Montmartre have possibly seen what many believed for a long time to be her grave. But it is not. It is, in fact, the grave of Marie's mother, Sophie, who died in 1865. And it's there in the famous Montmartre. And it is marked in a way that caused some confusion. It's marked Marie Taglioni à sa mère bien-aimée. And it really means Marie Taglioni to her beloved mother. And I presume that because Marie was a star, her name appeared on this placard rather than her mother's name. But it's always been a little unclear. But unfortunately, that has led to Sophie's grave being mistaken as Marie's. And so if you look up pictures of it online, it's usually just covered in dancers' shoes that go to kind of pay homage and, you know, pay their respects to this famous ballerina. And they're in various stages of decay. A lot of them are blackened from having sat out there for so long, but it's not at the right site, unfortunately. And if you go to Marie's actual grave, there are like two pair.
Yeah.
People haven't.
The people who did their research.
Yeah, there's been some work done in the last five or so years on the part of dance historians to try to get that corrected, like on maps of the city. And I think there is even a placard at the front of Montmartre that might be incorrect now, mm-hmm. that was put up later. And I'm not sure what the status of it is as of now when we're recording, which is 2013. But I was looking at tourism brochures from last year, from 2012, that even still said she was in Montmartre. So there's some confusion still being populated out there in the world.
Right.
When in fact, it's not accurate.
All of Filippo's choreography is lost to us, unfortunately. We do have notation of a recreation by Auguste Bournonville for the Royal Theatre of Copenhagen in 1836, after he had seen Taglioni in the role. There's also a speculative reconstruction by a choreographer named Pierre Lacotte in 1972.
Yeah, but we just don't have the notations. A lot of other ballets from history were notated so well that even when you see them performed in the modern era, it's basically the same steps being done. But we really don't have any of Filippo's, unfortunately. But Marie's impact, and consequently Filippo's, on the dance world is still certainly felt today. Whereas she was, you know, one of only a few dancers at the time to go on point, now it's really de rigueur for any serious dancer. I mean, you couldn't have a career in ballet and not dance on point.
Yeah, I cannot think of a ballet I have seen that has not included point work.
Yeah, some of the more modern ones that kind of bridge the gap between ballet and modern
yeah.
will not always go on point. But for the most part, you're looking at point work, which is its own whole thing.
Yeah.
I remember I talked briefly to my sports podiatrist about it, and he kind of made this face like, I don't want to get into this.
Well, and when I was young, I really, really wanted to take ballet. And I had a childhood friend who was a dancer, and she was very gifted. And my dad educated me on the trials of ballet dancing on your feet.
Yeah.
I don't think he was actually trying to talk me out of it. I think he was trying to help me understand what I was wanting to get into.
Yeah.
I did not pursue it. And that turns out to probably be pretty good because I am so tall that I was taller than most of the male dancers.
You had lovely lines, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also extremely inflexible.
That's a problem.
That would have been a lifelong, difficult struggle.
I will say once I quit dancing, probably about 4 years after I quit dancing on point, my feet suddenly grew a whole bunch.
Ah.
Like all of the impacting that had been done since I was, you know, 11 or 12 up into my early 20s. Once that stopped and my foot spread out, I went from like a size 5 to now I wear an 8.5.
Wow.
I mean, that didn't happen overnight. That happened over several years. But my feet did go through a growth spurt after I stopped doing point work.
Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday. Since this episode is out of the archive, if you heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of the show, that could be obsolete now. Our current email address is historypodcast@iheartradio.com. Our old How Stuff Works email address no longer works. You can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.